Gossip Curl, the podcast about all things hair.
Hello and welcome to Gossip Curl, the podcast about all things hair. My name is Hannah Tesfaye. I am your host. And today we will be talking about communication. More specifically, we will talk about the communication with your hairdresser concerning hair color. So you walk out of the salon with the results you had in mind when you entered. I'm not going to talk to myself. For sure, I am going to talk to the Leslie Jennison. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for being here and blessing us with your knowledge.
Oh, thank you. First of all, can I just say I'm so thrilled to be here, and I've so looked forward to meeting you and doing this podcast.
Oh, Leslie, that means a lot to me, actually, because, you know, I'm not an expert, but I get to ask you guys so much. And I feel like every episode I walk out of the studio having just had the best experience for myself.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's such fun just sharing knowledge and experience.
And to me, to be honest, it's really exciting to talk to people who are excited about the thing that they do.
Yeah.
And you are incredibly excited about thing that you
live and breathe it, yeah.
Right. So you've been a you've been a hairstylist or hairdresser. Do you still call it hairdresser?
Yeah, hair colorist.
Hair colorist for not that long of a time. You basically just started 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Four decades.
That is crazy. Because how did you start when you were 2 years old?
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. No, but really, you've done this for over 40 years, which
over
is crazy
years,
to
yeah.
me.
Just over 40 years.
So it's walk incredible. Us through your beginnings. How did you get into this?
I have to also say, sometimes it feels like I've done this job for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it does feel like 100 years. But most of the time, it just feels thrilling and exciting. And I never wanted to be a hairdresser. I really wanted to do prosthetics and makeup for TV, film, theatre. Mm-hmm. And I had written to the BBC and obviously no emails at that point. But and I'd given in my sort of CV, which is basically just at school. And they wrote back and said, you have to be 21 and a half years old. You have to have history and you have to have A-level art, and you had to have history as an O-level and English literature. And there was a few things.
Okay.
And so I went to college. I didn't go straight into hairdressing. I went to college to get my A-level art. And at that point, it also said you had to have a hairdressing qualification. So at that point, while I was at college, I got a Saturday job, literally down the road from where mummy and daddy lived. And they still, at that point, still had like a bank of hood dryers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't remember them using them that often, but it was still that kind of, not era, but it was an old fashioned, but I loved it.
Right.
I loved it. You know, I was only a Saturday girl. I was a Saturday girl and, you know, it's a lot of cleaning up and washing hair and, you know, but I loved it. And I think I kind of started to get the buzz of wanting to work with hair and being part of that environment. And then I managed to get into Vidal Sassoon. And within 6 months, makeup, prosthetics, everything went out the window and it was just hair. And even within 6 months, it was colour.
Interesting.
It was purely colour.
Because when you say Vidal Sassoon, right, I immediately go into like, oh, precision haircuts.
Yeah, yeah.
But for you, it was color.
Totally.
Does that have anything to do with your art background?
Oh, do you know, after all these years, I've never thought of that. For me, I always think there was a particular colorist. You know, I had to do, you know, certain amount of training. You still had to learn all the haircuts.
You did, yeah.
All the stuff and right. things. But there was one colorist in particular that I found him so inspiring. He was mad as a hatter. And actually looking at this wall, he left Sassoons and went on to breed Afghan hounds. So, you know, like, but he was just amazing and so flamboyant. And I just thought, oh, I want a bit of this. And I also kind of felt probably a bit selfish that there were less people wanting to be colorists
at that time.
I thought, I want to be one of the few. I think, yeah.
So apart from the, from, you know, the mentor or the this almost idol, that's kind of how you kind of like describe him. Apart from that impact, or apart from that impact, what do you think it is about the art and the trade itself, like the skill itself, that kind of attracted to you, attracted you to that part of the business?
I think I also found like there's a huge positivity about colouring hair and also perming in those days, because you're kind of always adding something. You're adding colour, you're adding texture, you're adding. Whereas with a haircut, subconsciously, you're always having something taken away from you. I'm a colourist, so I'm slightly biased. So that's my take on it. Right. So probably all those hair cutters out there were probably going, what are you talking about? But that's my take.
We're relieving the people of things is how they're going to see it.
Absolutely.
Like, but I am adding color to their life, you know?
Yeah. It really does feel like a superpower, because you're making people obviously look better, but it's about making people feel really good and making them feel better about themselves. It is a superpower.
It's so fascinating to hear, because on this podcast, I've had the privilege and the honor of talking to a few people who do hair professionally. And whenever I ask them, what aspect of your job do you really love? And they will always mention the people.
Yeah.
So hairdressers are like really people's people.
Absolutely.
That's so cute.
Absolutely.
I love that. But now let's get into it, right? We are looking at 40 years of hair trends and coloring trends coming and going, right?
Yeah.
Two questions about that. One, what is it that you have noticed about trends that has changed in the last years?
Yep.
And number two, what exactly is a trend and what exactly is a fad?
Oh, that's very good. I am slightly obsessed by kind of trends as a colorist, because there is this aspect of hair cutting. You don't really have trends like we used to have, you know, sort of in the last sort of 10 years. That idea of a hair trend has slightly moved on, and it's all about the individual. But coloring and sort of placement, there is still a big hair trend versus fad. And I think I actually do a seminar on it, but it's about 40 minutes long, because it's, I go back to like the very first documented hair trend, which is like 3000 BCE. So it used to be BC, but now it's BCE. I mean, that's over 5,000 years ago.
What was that trend?
I mean, that was ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
That was wigs. And it was a hair trend, obviously not a fad, because it was widespread. And, you know, these were wigs that were very intricate, and the more intricate, the higher status you had. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, everybody wanted to emulate that.
Right.
And that became this massive trend.
Okay, gotcha.
That was hair. So like the first color trend was more 1 BC. So, I mean, but I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that idea of, you know, a lot of the sort of recent generations will think that it's just recent history, you know, the last 100 years or last 200 years, but it goes all the way back. I mean, I won't go, but I just say one of my favourite things is like the 1500s. They used to send little dolls, pippins they were called, like little wooden carved dolls with the fashion that mostly the French courts and the German courts, not so much Italy, but the German and the French courts. And there were hairstyles. And obviously the diplomats, and I'm obviously set trick to the UK, so I'm thinking when they came over, all the diplomats and the ambassadors, and they brought these little pippins along, how the UK were inspired by the French courts and the German courts. And, you know, I mean, I can go, that could be another podcast. I mean, because I could talk forever about that.
There's so many things that could be their own podcast when it comes to hair. It's crazy.
You
could absolutely go down that rabbit hole, right?
Total rabbit
but
hole.
So what I'm hearing is trends have been around for a really long time.
Absolutely.
And they have been documented also for a really long time.
Absolutely.
Right? So coming back to that, what is a trend and what is a fad?
Brilliant. So I think they have some of the same qualities, basically being a popular color. So it's either like a particular color palette, or it can be a color technical way of placing hair. So if you think like maybe a granny gray, that was a fad because it was something that was of the moment. It popped out almost of nowhere, lasted, I mean, fads normally are like one or two seasons or maybe a year, and then that out of fashion.
It's gone.
So they come in and they go straight out.
Right.
And, you know, there is a bit of a difference because if you think about full-blown trends, then they kind of very kind of gently, gradually build and build and build, and then they cross demographics and cross genres of people and very much long-lasting. And if you think of lived in colour, I mean, that's been around for a while now, and that will be a very long-lasting trend. I think of it more of a kind of, that's going to be a classic. But I even remember which salon I was in at Sassoon's. It was 44 Sloane Street, which is now the big Prada. It's beautiful. And somebody coming in, this is the early 90s, somebody coming in and she was Parisian and she wanted balayage. Now, nobody... I mean, maybe there were one or two people in London doing balayage, but certainly not at Sassoon's. We didn't do balayage. And I remember doing her hair, but I can't remember what I did, but I definitely didn't do balayage because I didn't know balayage, you know?
You didn't know the technique.
No, didn't. I couldn't do it. I mean, we had a technique called flying colours that was for short hair, but that was something else. But I remember in the staff room and we were all talking about, you know, this is never, ever going to happen in the UK because... who's going to pay to have the hair coloured when it already looks grown out? Because, of course, this was before social media. So those trends were very localised to different regions.
Interesting.
You know, but you think about London. London has regional trends, like East London.
Looks very different.
So different from West London.
Yeah, I understand.
So,
absolutely.
You know, but I mean, global trends are something else. But there's like some fads will go to... big trends. There's a fad. Well, I think everybody thought it was going to be a fad. Probably started a couple of years ago of fantasy hair colour. Again, I mean, we haven't seen that since like the 2000s and 2010s.
Yeah. Early 2010s too.
That's really because you've got Gen Alpha who, you know, the oldest Gen Alpha is what, 14? 13, 14? They're able to experiment. With colours. So it's slightly different from last time because last time was a sort of economic, you know, that's the reason those unicorn colours came in. And it was more pastels, whereas this time it's a little bit more of the sort of greens and the blues. And there is some pastels, but because that Gen Alpha, there's not much bleach going on. So you're getting deeper blues and deeper greens because... of that age group. And I think you can see how some of the marketeers, some of the, you know, they're aiming at that market. So, you know, you can see that they can recognise that this will not just be a fad, this is now becoming a trend.
Maybe this is a technical question, but what do you think needs to happen in order for a fad to become a trend?
Yeah, good question. I would say more often than not, it's a viral moment. So it is a social media thing. So that's, if you think about, fads weren't as much around before, Instagram was 2010, wasn't it? I think 2010.
Early 2010s.
You didn't really see as many fads before. It was more of a localized trend. So London had this, or the UK had this, and the US had this, and... So I think it's mostly a moment and normally viral.
And then it needs longevity to actually.
It's longevity that makes it a trend.
Okay, got it.
Totally. That is the big thing. Pops out of fashion, stays on trend and long lasting.
All right. Then it becomes that. So with, okay. So say I'm fascinated by a fad, right? And I go to the hairdresser or to my colorist and say, listen, I want to do that. My hairdresser tells me no, because it won't work or whatever. Yeah. Like, how do I proceed from there?
I would say hairdressers know what's going to look good on somebody. Mm-hmm. Even though, like, I know what looks good on me and we all know what looks good on ourselves. But until, say you came in and you said, I want a mushroom brown. I want a cool ash brown. Mm-hmm. Or I want yellow hair, or I want platinum silvery hair. I would be like, I think, okay, if you want to go blonde, let's not think about platinum. Let's think about the warmer sort of caramel blondes, you know, because you've got that beautiful warm skin. You've got brown eyes. You've got darker hair. I mean, honestly, you can take practically everything, but I wouldn't say silver. I wouldn't say ash. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say anything too yellow. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, when you wear those colours against yourself, you kind of know what looks right.
Right.
We have this really good thing that if you put silver against somebody or gold,
you know, straight away,
your eyes light up, your skin lights up.
Right, right, right. So as a consumer, right?
Yes.
Or as a client, it's really important to probably also listen to your hairdresser.
Yeah.
But I think it's for them also interesting or important more to find a workaround, right? To kind of like say, okay, see, this version of this trend or fad won't work for you, but how about
this,
right?
Absolutely.
Which is kind of like adjacent to whatever you were trying to do, but not really it, but it'll work for you.
And also, you know, if you were really dead set on having a mushroom, like an ashy light brown on your hair, you could still have it, but I would put it behind the hairline. Mm-hmm. So maybe something sort of more caramelly, slightly more toffee toned, or just a slightly natural warm brown, and then have something flatter. If you were dead set and you really wanted it, then you can always have what you want, but just make sure it's not on the hairline.
Gotcha. Okay, so say we found something that we can both agree on, right? And you kind of go like, ugh, I can't wait for this to be over, right? You're like, I can't wait for people to stop requesting, I don't know, whatever it is that they've been requesting you to do, right?
Yeah.
So what was the last trend where you would said, like, I want this to be over ASAP?
I think, honestly, there hasn't been a trend that I've hated. Mm-hmm. I mean, even when I think back to, like, the very early 90s when it was Spice Girl Stripes, and that was red, blonde, and black. Mm-hmm. I loved doing it at the time. And at that time, it was amazing.
It was the thing.
You look at it now, it looks really, not tragic, but it looks... Do you know what
tragic. Not tragic.
Not tragic, but, you know, you can tell it was of that moment.
Yeah.
You know, so if somebody came in and asked me for that, I would do it in a modern way. I probably wouldn't use black, blonde, and red together. You know, but that could still work. But I think... So any technique kind of works as long as you're using the right colours for your skin and your face and your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But if I'm honest, the one, and this probably be a bit controversial.
Let's go for it.
But balayage. Now, I love balayage. Mm-hmm. I love doing balayage and I love the look of balayage. But my concern is balayage is really a technique that you would want to go to your hairdresser and have done. And then in between, if you want to get your roots done or you want to gloss it or you want to tone it, great, then you can do that yourself. Balayage, you know, it's like anything, it's out there on the internet. There's not like 100 ways to do balayage or 1,000, where there's hundreds of thousands of ways to show somebody how to do balayage. And it's a fine art.
It is.
Basically, it's a fine art. And I just don't like to, see people that have bad colour because it's so easy not to have bad colour. You know?
That's what you say.
Yeah.
I'm like, you say it's easy because you probably have it like on speed dial, like, you know. But okay, I understand what you're saying because I think there are some trends that are just so incredibly technical.
Absolutely.
Like balayage being one of them.
Yeah.
But I can absolutely see people experimenting with just like strong colors.
Oh,
you know, then it's not going to be like as intricate application technique. It's just going to be a head of pink, I guess.
I love mm-hmm. when you see people anywhere with really strong color. I know they've done it themselves and I love it. I'm really up for that because I think, you know, life is so precious and so beautiful that not to try anything that you want to try. You know, and just add to like, oh, you know, I won't have anything and be boring. And try it. Try bright red. Try bright pink. Try bright yellow. Not you, but bright, you know, you with bright pink. I mean, it would look
insane. Could just hold up my skirt up to my head, right?
Absolutely. You would look amazing.
But the thing is, you know, not me just thinking about about if I did pink hair, right? I'm like, Leslie, we're talking about conversation and communication today, right? And most of it concerning hair color, right? And I think part of communication, a big part of communication, especially from the hairdresser side, is expectation management, right?
Yeah.
I come in and I have this big, big, big plan. How do I avoid dreaming too big?
Really good. I mean, for me, I think as a hairdresser, as a hair colorist, mm-hmm. it's my job mm-hmm. to extract everything that I need to make that job perfect for you. So, you know, if somebody comes in and says, say you wanted red hair, mm-hmm. well, you know, what do you mean by red? Your strawberry rosé could mm-hmm. be my pastel, you know,
pink,
you mm-hmm. know, so, but that's my job. I think also my job is to really explain the process, the timings, you know, making sure people are really understanding how long they're going to be in the salon, but also how often they need to come back.
Uh-huh.
So before I'd even mix up anything, I'm going to make sure that that person, do you want a color that's going to last 4 or 5 months?
Right.
Are you happy to come in every 6-8 weeks? Do you want it to be this? You know, so I mean, I know we're going in depth with consultations a bit later, but there is nothing more important than doing a really concise, really not intensive, but you know, a very deep consultation. And whether I've looked after you for the first time or I've looked after that person for 30 years, I always do a deep consultation. So I always sit next to them and I always look in their eye. I don't look through the mirror. I think,
listen, because I have seen those really long 4-part consultation videos on social media where you listen to a hairdresser talking their client through like 10, 15 minutes of just consultation. Meanwhile, I'm like super impatient, completely ruined by like 1-minute Instagram videos where I kind of go like, can we just see the result? Because I don't care about the consultation. But you're saying the consultation is actually where it's at.
100%. Mm-hmm. If you get the consultation absolutely right, there is no way that your client, your model, whoever is in front of you, there's no way that she's not going to be super, super happy. She's going to not, hold on, she's going to be over the moon with mm-hmm. what you do
mm-hmm.
because you've got that consultation correct.
Right.
Sometimes a consultation is 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is 10 minutes. It's not normally more than, you know, unless it's somebody who's really unsure about what they're doing, but 10, 15 minutes max.
Well, it feels like that to me, right? Okay, so there is a difference between the actual time that has passed and what I think has passed when I'm just trying to see the result, right? Okay, but that's a different story. Right. I'm like,
do we feel that? Okay, yes, you want this color. Okay. But actually, because I'm going to be deadly honest with you, because I think, and now I feel actually kind of bad about it, because I sometimes think if especially on social media, if hairdressers put out their like minute long consultations on Instagram, I kind of go like, who's interested in this? But it sounds so pretentious, because now thinking about it, if I was in the chair, I'd want to know.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm just gonna watch the whole thing from now on.
You know, there's something that, you know, when I'm in the salon only a couple of days a month, and I love going into the salon. I absolutely love it. But I always say to all the colorists, you know, it's really important. I would never let anybody say, oh, are we doing the same again? Ever. Because I think that's just lazy. And I think, you know, to give your client the very best, you need to say, well, how did you find it? Mm-hmm. Is there anything else we can do that changes it? Shall we tweak it this time? Now it's spring, summer. Shall we do this? Now it's autumn, winter. Shall we just change this? Let's tweak this a bit. I think, you know, I think if I was to say, oh, let's do the same as last time, why are they coming to me?
Right.
They might as well just, you know, go anywhere.
Okay, so let's get into the details, because I'm never going to rush my consultation ever again. I'm like, okay, let's sit and talk about it. I'm like, can we just do it? Because I am literally the one who will say, like, same as last time.
Well, that's fine. Oh, if somebody says, I want it exactly the same, absolutely fine. Very, very happy to do that. Mm-hmm. But I've given them the option.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's get into the meat a little bit, right? The brighter you go, the faster you fall. Color fading. Absolutely. Is that a thing? Is that something that I need to have in mind?
It is. Mm-hmm. I mean, mostly with reds. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is, technically, it's a very small coloured molecule. I mean, all the tints in the tube are a small uncoloured molecule. They get the developer, mm-hmm. hydrogen peroxide, whatever. You mix it up. The developer opens up the spaces,
right,
and the cuticles of the hair. Those uncoloured molecules go in and they clump together. I mean, this is very layman terms, but clump together and can't get back out.
Right.
So if you think, I always say like a lobster pot. So if you imagine mm-hmm. a lobster can get in, but it can't get back out. Now, most colours clump together. I mean, somebody from R&D would just go, well, that's a bit
wrong. But anyway, nobody's seen.
No one's
R&D, don't listen. Please don't listen. Yeah. Just okay.
If it's small, they clump together, get big. They cannot get out those cellular spaces. However, red never kind of gets that much bigger. So red is a colour that will always fade. But, you know, there are ways to kind of keep the red as long as possible.
Okay, so red is the one colour that we need to kind of like be prepared for it to fade.
Definitely. And also, you know, when you're toning blondes, mm-hmm. you know, because obviously that some of the cuticles have moved away and that toning can sort of slip out. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. that's not a bad thing, because there's very easy ways to, again, elongate the timing of that.
When we were talking about consultations earlier, you said something about maintenance. Are you willing to put in the time Absolutely. That it takes and the money? Let's not Absolutely, forget about that.
Yeah.
When you do it professionally, let's put it that way, because maybe you'll find a way to do it at home. But do you have the time to maintain your hair color? What do you think is the most complicated or most challenging hair color to maintain? I mean, red is going to fade.
I suppose blondes are more difficult to look after, because blondes are affected by the atmosphere that we're in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you live in a hard water area, which a lot of London is, but, you know, I can't say that.
Berliner is true.
So you can get sort of a chemical buildup. You know, if you've got copper pipes, you've got a problem where you might get that slightly, not greeny tinge, but that slightly mm-hmm, olivey mm-hmm, tinge. Mm-hmm. And toners fade out. So blondes are probably more
difficult to look after, because also then you need to make sure that you're maintaining the structure of the hair. So you need to be making sure that you're using the right conditioners and the right shampoos and the aftercare, you know, basically the care between you coming in to see me and the next time. So if I'm saying, right, if you can use ABC and do this once a week, do that every 2 weeks, when that client comes back, her colour should be exactly the same as it was when she left, but just have a regrowth. The same as a red, same as any colour. So if your hairdresser, you know, hairdressers, historically, we never like to sell products. You know, the whole thing about telling a client, oh, buy this shampoo, buy it, because we're not naturally marketeer people. We want to colour hair and we want to cut hair.
You just want to do the hair.
Yeah. But I really, truly think that unless your hairdresser does tell you what shampoo, moisturiser, everything, I'm not doing a good job, because if my client goes away and buys something from a supermarket, that's never a problem. But as long as I've said which one to buy from the supermarket, I don't have a problem with supermarket shampoos at all.
Yeah.
But there are certain ones that you wouldn't use because that would lift the colour away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's almost as important as the actual technique, you know, spending all that time and love doing something, and then they go off and it's stripped out because it's not a dodgy shampoo, but a shampoo that's not correct for their hair type.
They left with beautiful platinum hair,
yes,
and come back with yellow hair, you know something has happened and they didn't listen to
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Right? And because I think it's also like, yeah, you recommend the hairdresser or your colorist recommends something, but I think it's absolutely, especially in this economy,
totally.
Because they're not going to lie to you.
Totally.
It kind of helps if you, it kind of helps if you recommend something that's
absolutely.
Like more affordable, right?
Totally, totally.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, that's why, you know, for me, I feel like there's this perfect synergy that we probably, as a professional hairdresser, didn't have for a long time. I think people are more tuned up, you know, the way the world is, like you say, the world is a different place. And I think we have to understand, you know, okay, like I say, you come in and you see me, you have the big jobs done, you have the technical jobs done.
Right.
If you want to gloss it yourself, you know, we have amazing products that you can buy in the pharmacy and the supermarkets,
right,
that are brilliant at keeping everything going.
Right.
Or, you know, if you've got a grey root, you want to do that, fine. But then come back and see me for the special needs.
Okay, so when I want to minimize the chance of disappointment, I will communicate clearly what I need, what I want. Are pictures helpful?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I would say the actual hairdresser should be sort of holding this conversation, should
right.
be saying to you, now, what is it you want? What is right. it we're going to do? What, et cetera, like
right.
we mentioned. Photos are, images are a huge plus. But again, it's my responsibility to say, okay, that image that you're looking at there, that hair type is probably AI'd and it's probably being pushed out, and that reflection there is this and this reflection here is this. But that's, again, that's my job to let you know that information. So it's also really important for me to say, what is it about that picture you really like?
Mm-hmm.
What is it about that colour you really like? Because sometimes it's actually that they want to look more like that person.
Oh,
because when,
yes,
then you'd
course.
Always say,
yeah.
show me. And I do that, especially with new clients. I always say, I want you to bring in pictures of the hair colours you really don't like and pictures that you really do like.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you can really understand, is it the imagery that they're loving
right.
or is it the real tones? Are you seeing caramel blondes in all of those images, or is it popping up in these and
gotcha.
It's really the whole image?
Is it the vibe that you're going for
yes.
or is it the actual
color
that you're going for?
Yeah.
Is it that I want to look like
yes.
Zendaya or do
yes.
I really want
do
Zendaya's
want
haircut?
Yeah, yeah.
I do want her life. I'm very happy with my husband,
yeah.
but I want that type of level,
yeah.
that level of talent?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Okay, I do.
Yeah.
Also, I want those legs.
Yeah.
Okay, here we are. That's okay. Okay. So here's the thing. We did all that, right? We communicated and we both think, okay, we're on the same page. Let's get it done. We figure out what it is I want. And you look at the work that you've done. You're happy with it. You're like, I nailed this one. Chef's kiss. Ciao. Right?
Yeah.
I look in the mirror and I hate it.
Then I've done a wrong consultation.
You have.
Yeah.
Leslie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For improving my communication and listening skills. Because I think we can all take home with us that it's absolutely crucial to have the right conversations, ask the right questions, and have the honest answers ready when consulting with your hairdresser about the color that you want. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Leslie. Thank you for
being
here.
Just a joy. Thank you very much.
All right. And I hope you took something home with us. I'm sure you did. And we're going to see you in the next episode of Gossip Girl. Take care. Bye. Ciao.
Gossip Girl, the podcast about all things hair. With me, your host, Hadna Tesfaye. A podcast from Henkel Consumer Brands, brought to you by the Global Hair Upskilling Team, produced by Bose Park Productions. Executive producers, Manjana Dietrich, Sue Holder, and Chris Guse. Editor, Ian Mayer-Marzalek. Production, Fabio Lautenschläger. Project Management, Niki Sitsch. Hair and Makeup, Rania Abdurrahman, Ariel Tross. Styling, Romina Mann. If you like Gossip Girl, please subscribe to the podcast, hit the notification bell so you don't miss an episode. And while you're at it, leave us a review and tell all your friends about us.